All right, welcome to Discovery Paranormal. This is Michael Angley. This is United Public Radio Network. This is February 20th, 2018. And we're getting through winter, almost over. It's like spring outside, 68 degrees, sunny, beautiful today, and beautiful night tonight. We are go for spring, and I say go for spring after the Arctic air and all the other stuff that makes you shiver, makes you quiver. I don't like it. Some people are like, oh, you know, I like the cold weather, whatever. Those people are crazy, man. You know, unless you really, hey, if you love the cold weather, you're the type that goes out there skiing and you like to eat snow and whatever, make snow angels, more power to you. That's not me. That's not most of the world. But in the winter, we just have to muddle through and get through it and survive. And then, boom, here comes beautiful spring. So on tonight's show, I want to talk about indigo children. I also want to talk about the misdiagnosis of children who are psychic, mediums, indigo, whatever, right? And then there's a whole bunch of classifications for people that don't want to think their kid has ADHD or autism or any of that stuff, and then they want to say, well, you know, they're special and then they're indigo and whatever, and a lot of times they're not. So I'm going to talk about the differences between and also the points of being an indigo child. So when I was 13 years old, I had a psychic tell me that I was indigo. That was the color of my aura. There wasn't a lot said back then about indigo children. You're talking about like the late 70s, you know? Early 80s. So these days, there's a lot more information out there. There's also a lot of misinformation out there. And you have to really be able to decide what the truth of it is. So an indigo child is an upgraded blueprint of humanity, so to speak, a term that came up when addressing the auric colors of these very different children. So previously, auric fields were expected to be in shades of the rainbow, but the indigo's field was dominated by a royal blue color, establishing a change of course for humanity. And this is what people think that the next level of humans, that the children being born, a lot of children being born today are indigo children. And this is why I'm going to go over the 13 common traits of an indigo child to see if you are an indigo child or were anyway, or your children are indigo children, and to, you know, and to recognize that and nurse it along, right? So gifted souls on a clear mission to challenge and shift reality. Indigo children first began appearing in the 1970s, late 60s. Beyond psychic awareness, they are highly driven and creative with a perception that sees through the established norms of society. Old souls indeed. And you know, people have said, yeah, you know, you're an old soul or whatever. And you feel like you're an old soul. You feel like even you don't belong sometimes. And that's like, I'll go over exactly the way I feel in life because I feel those things too, you know. And then a lot of it's being sensitive. A lot of it's being like an empath. You know, I have a lot of friends who are psychic mediums and all that. And we all share our feelings and our information with one another on just how we survive and adjust and get through it. And for a long time, I never said even the word psychic when it came to me, you know, because it wasn't the accepted normal to say, well, you know, I have these thoughts and I have these visions and that type of thing, or I know when things are going to happen and I can predict things and all that. You know, you keep it to yourself. And then my mom knew, a couple of other people really close to me later on in the years knew. But then it's just stuff that you keep to yourself. And then, you know, there's a lot of psychics that do readings. They do all that. You know what? I could never be bothered with any of that stuff because I feel like it just is what it is. You know, I've had great psychics give me great readings. And then no matter what they tell you, it's very difficult to steer the course around any kind of negative thing. I mean, it's nice to have the heads up if something's going to happen, but you really have to be able to understand the information, you know what I mean? So people want a change. People have always wanted a change. People have written about messiahs because they wanted a change. They wanted these beings to come forward and be able to miraculously change their crappy world. And then isn't that really what it is? That when people wish for the future, they want these great things to happen, they really just want to change their crappy existence, the stuff that they experience on a daily basis, you know, and it hurts life sometimes, doesn't it? You know, it stings sometimes, you know, and then it doesn't have to sting or hurt so bad because it's really up to other people. It's people mainly that make people suffer. You know, if you have some disease or if you have this or if you have that, and then we can go over, hey, profits and, you know, cancer profitability, that they could have cured cancer a long time ago, but they didn't want to because it's not profitable to do that. So if you think of it in those terms, and you have to think of it in the most sinister, evil terms, you know, the second you leave your house, people don't love you, you know? And I tell kids that all the time, like the kids, you know? It's like, don't think for a second that you get past that door that people are going to be loving and all forgiving, whatever. Like, people are people, and you got to be prepared to deal with people. But people, you know, out there want a better life. And then, you know, here in the United States, even the poorest people can have a great life compared to people in other countries that are really poor, that are drinking mud water and eating rats and things like that. That happens in a lot of places. So people are always wanting that Messiah. They're always wanting the change of society. They're looking to the stars for a future for themselves. And then really, the answer is inside of people. And that sounds kind of corny, but when you look for answers, it's always inside of you. So now, Indigo Children, do I believe that there are people out there that are gifted? You know, and I don't ever use the term supernatural because there's no such thing. You know what I mean? There's nature and nothing's above nature. Nothing. Nothing's below nature. Nothing's nature is a given. It's a whole huge thing. So when I think of the people saying supernatural and your supernatural abilities, I'm thinking of maybe talents or abilities that people don't use or can use or can strengthen. And like any ability that you have, you know, you don't just start, you know, playing the violin as a virtuoso. You know, some children do, but those children had past lives, obviously, where they had those talents and abilities and they carried it over. And that happens a lot. It happens a lot when we see, you know, there's a lot of reincarnation information and facts out there. I've done shows about reincarnation. I've done shows about past lives and future lives, you know, and getting the feeling for these things and also why people have problems in this life. And then a lot of times are things that you carried over from your past life. So this is the deal. People want change, but they don't like change. So in this world of the Indigo, I'm going to ask the question, are Indigo Children the next it, the next level? And if that's so, how come things aren't getting any better in the world? So I'm going to say that people have abilities. I'm going to say that people have more talented abilities than some other people. But really, you have to be able to develop, right? So let's talk about the Indigo. And then noticing if your child, you know, some people say, oh, my child is so special and has all these things and whatever, is so smart. Yeah, you know what? The best thing you can do for that kid is not put a screen in front of their face. And then also nurture their abilities, no matter what their passions are, abilities are, you know, if they're positive anyway, nurture those abilities. And I'm going to talk about how, you know, I know psychics that were diagnosed with all kinds of conditions when they were young because the psychiatrists refused to understand that world. And then because of that, people get misdiagnosed, they get fed drugs that they didn't want to take. They tried giving me Ritalin because of my hyperactivity, and then my mom refused to do it. She couldn't do it. She couldn't drug her son. So let's talk about 13 common traits of an Indigo child. And then, you know what? You can find lists and you can find tests and whatever. There's a whole bunch of crapola online that you can find. But this is just the basic gist of it. You know, I mean, there's going to be lists that, you know, 20 points of an Indigo child. And, you know, here's a test you could take or whatever. Forget about all that. We're going to talk about the real deal. And then I want to really get into this because there's a lot of people out there that are going to feel this. They're going to feel this for themselves. So if you were an Indigo child, and now you're grown up. Well, you're now called a light worker, you know? That's what they call a light worker. And then it's kind of funny because I tend to describe things in terms of light and or water, you know? But it's interesting when you listen to yourself, when you go to describe something and then, you know, how you describe it and how you communicate with other people. And the people that are gifted, It's like when you talk to somebody, you're not just using your words, you know, you're actually using a whole bunch of different things, but it's also like you feel like you have this spiritual connection that you can kind of reach inside of somebody and then bang, they automatically understand what you mean or what you're talking about. Even if your words aren't so great, they still understand, you know. All right, let's get into this list before we get into that. Number one, indigo children, you feel entitled. You feel, and that's like not feel like you should be a king or queen. You feel like you were born feeling special and you know it. That there's a purpose for you, that there's something there, that there's something bigger. And then that's something that you're always connected with. So I know there's a lot of people that feel that. And it's not just feeling special. And people tell their kids they're special all the time. And, you know, it may be special to them, but it doesn't mean that they're special to the world. And I think that kids need to know, or anybody, any human needs to know, when you go out there, you're on your own. You know, and you can't rely on the world to do all these things. You got to do it for yourself. You got to love yourself, and you got to make yourself go forward. You have to focus on the dream. Keep your eye on the prize, you know, and then don't ever assume somebody else is going to do something great for you, or they're going to reach out for you and do these things, because they won't. They won't. You know how rare that is? Almost impossibly rare. So, all right, number two with indigo children, you are destined to be here. You are confident and even arrogant at times and emboldened by something larger than you can name. And then, you know, in the Tao Te Ching, right? The thing that has no name can't be named anyway. And then that's kind of the gist of it. That's the point of this. Like, if we can name it, we don't know it. You know, if it's bigger than that, especially in the terms of dimensional energy, you know, and it just can go on and on. And if you ever listen to Carl Sagan, love Carl Sagan. I knew his father-in-law well. We talked a lot about, never knew Carl Sagan. He died before I moved to Ithaca, New York. But his father-in-law, great man. We always hung out and talked and just had really great, deep, scientific conversations, you know. So, but Carl Sagan, you know, has a video on YouTube talking about the fourth dimension. You know, it's a dimension that we wouldn't be able to see. We might be able to see some of the contact points, but we can't see the entire thing, or maybe even a shadow of it. It's just really interesting to look at that. And I think that there's so many levels, an infinite amount of levels, especially when we talk about physics. You know, there's the micro level of physics that acts exactly opposite than the macro level of physics. And I think that there is also what I call a mega level of physics, something so big that we can't see it, that we're literally little tiny bacteria compared to that world. And it just seems like things layer themselves like that. But people who are indigo, or people who are light workers, feel like they have a task, you know. And no matter how screwed up their lives are, and I'll say that because I've met light workers that, you know, had alcohol problems, drug problems, whatever, they self-medicate because so much information is flowing through them and they don't know how to control it, to shut it down, or, you know, squeeze it out. And I was lucky enough to have known John Edward, you know, and then my mom went to him as a psychic back when he was going to St. John's. You know, I've watched his show. I've listened to stuff that he's talked about. I've never bought any of his books or anything like that. But the things that I gather from what he says about shutting it off, you know, you literally have to be able to, you know, flick that switch. And that's how you have a life. Otherwise, the people who are psychic, the people who are receiving this information, or, you know, like being in a big crowd, if you're a psychic, if you're an empath, you're sensitive, that's like poison to you, you know? Being in a large crowd or a packed city. And I'm from the city. I'm from Long Island, and I spent a lot of time in New York City. You just have to shut it down. And I feel like, you know, when you're going through that, you create this this little tornado around yourself of light, you know, and it kind of just keep people away. And you keep, not just people, but energy, you know? You want to keep that arm's length energy, and then you're okay. But a lot of people can't do that. They can't shut it off. I've done case after case after case with Peter Canillis. We do these ghost hunts, and you can call them ghost hunts and paranormal investigations. I know a lot of people out there hate it when I dumb down and say ghost hunt, but you know, it really is what it is. And then we deal with a lot of people who have issues, like our friend David, who's a medium. He doesn't want to be. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want anything to do with it. Instead, you know what? I think there are times where he wants to embrace some kind of power angle of it. And then there's times where he gets afraid. you know, and then a lot of bad stuff comes his way. Now he lives in this farmhouse where the landlord told him it's haunted. You know, there's a depressed woman walking around. He goes, see slave people walking around, whatever. People see all kinds of stuff. This isn't an area where there's slavery, you know. In fact, we're going to go out in a couple of weeks, and then we're going to do an investigation at this slave burial ground that's in Caroline, New York, you know. So the thing is, with David, he moved into a house that was owned by a doctor who's the only doctor in the area. He's related to all the other, these families that came from the Carolinas that had these slaves, you know. And this is kind of around when they were freed too, you know. So they were freed and they were able to work the land locally there too. There's a whole history, very rich, interesting history. And this guy lives in the house that was the doctor's house in the temporary morgue, you know. So obviously it's going to have activity. And we did this place, and I'll tell you, this place is, I don't know, I'm getting off base from Indigo, but we have plenty of time. This place is that you can go into as a paranormal investigator and you feel like you're surrounded. You feel like they're just everywhere, like packed in there like sardines, you know. And a lot of them will go and hide, go to basement, go in the attic, kind of go where people don't go. And these are earthbound. We call them basically earthbound entities, and they really can't leave. Either they have no understanding of the transition, or nobody was there to meet them, or they've done something terrible and they're stuck in this world. I mean, it could be any reason. But, you know, visitations is different. They come, they go, they visit, and say hello. They, you know, they'll blow some air in your face or some waft of perfume or something like that. And you know they're around and they're gone. You know, they're looking in on you, right? And then time over there is not the same as time here. That's a huge difference, you know. But in this case, this guy David's laying in bed, looks out in the hallway and sees, like, you know, like slave children walking by looking at him, you know. And then he said there's something clawing at him under the bed. It's all kinds of stuff. And then the private investigator, who had the scientific mind inside of me, says, I don't believe in any of this stuff. I can't see it and I can't understand it, like, through photography. I want to hear it. I want to be able to whatever. But then the sensitive part of me understands what's there. And I feel it. And like when Pete and I do these investigations, you know, I feel like we kind of build a bridge. And then that's when a lot of the good stuff happens. We start getting a lot of information flowing back and forth. But nonetheless, there are people out there that have abilities, whether they want it or not, they have them. And it's as simple as that. And I think that to understand it, I told them, go read a bunch of books. You know, go read a bunch of books. I can't even recommend any because I don't read those types of books, you know. I don't watch paranormal shows. I don't watch paranormal movies. It doesn't mean anything to me because I'm in that world and I'm doing it myself. And I feel like if I'm sitting there for 2 hours watching some bunk on TV, I could be doing it myself. I could be out there doing it myself. I don't like wasting time, you know, on nothing. So Ghost Adventures and whatever, they put on a show. They put on a show. You have to understand that. It's a show to sell advertising, and they put on a show. But when it comes to real information, not just some little scratch on the wall that could be a rat, and then you're saying it's paranormal, or somebody grabbed your ass, you know? Yeah, somebody grabbed your ass. Great. I want to see the hand that did it. I want to see pictures. I want to hear evidence, man. I want to see footsteps on the ground. I want to know something. I want to know the history, too, you know? Anyway, getting back to Indigo. Now, there's going to be people out there that have all kinds of abilities, but you have to understand it's levels of ability. So let's just say sensitive, okay? So you could be a little sensitive, or you could be a lot sensitive. You could be sensitive to the point where you see spirits or you hear them. I know mediums that can only see them. I know mediums that can only hear them. I know mediums that can only feel them, you know, like feel that they're around. So it's kind of like that. But all right, number three. These are the 13 points of if you were an indigo, if your child's an indigo, or whatever you got going on. Okay, you have high expectations of yourself and others. This can make for a challenging relationship and interactions with people. You see only the best and expect others to live up to it. Towards yourself, you could be unrelentingly self-critical. And this is something I had to get over in my life. I'm getting up there, man. I'm 51. And it's not old. It's not young. It's in the middle, sort of. I am my worst critic. And I don't think I could do anything good. You know, and that's still where my head is at. But I understand there's no such thing as perfect. Because at one time, I would try to make everything perfect. And then you just waste a lot of time trying to get that done. But you have to realize there is no perfect. You just do it to the best of your abilities. You hit the mark, you move on, you know. So, and then having high expectations for others That was my problem too. I was very judgmental. And I call that judgmental. That I'm looking at other people in society saying, why are they doing this? This is screwed up. What's wrong with them, you know? And they should live like me and be on my level and then whatever, you know? But then you say, well, that's pretty arrogant, you know? And who's to say someone should be on your level? Who's to say the level they're on is terrible? But if they're doing bad things, especially, that's where you kind of want to step in and say, hey, this is wrong and whatever. If you're close to them, if you're friends with them, if you care about their future at all, you put it in terms that they can understand and then they can relate to, you know, that type of thing. But you can't expect anyone to be like you. And then, you know, like in private investigation, if I teach somebody, I tell them, don't think that people think like you. You're different. You're an investigator. You have to think like everybody. You know, you want to catch a terrorist? You got to think like a terrorist. You want to catch a jewel thief? You have to think like a jewel thief. And that's really what it is. You want to catch a fish? You got to think like a fish. You want to go play golf and get the little stupid white ball into the little stupid hole all yards away? You got to think like the ball. That's really what it is. In martial arts, we say we also follow through. We think through our target, you know. You have to be able to understand things on all sides and understand what you're dealing with at all times. So it's very hard to deal with a society when you're sensitive and then you run into people you know are bad. I just had Robbie Thomas on the show last week where in his new book that's out, he talked about people, you know, well, this guy anyway, there's several stories in there, but one of the people he talked about was this guy who had committed murder, and he had this dark cloud around him, and he knew it, and so, you know, like, when you deal with people, and I've run into people like that, too, I've run into really, really horrible people, I won't go into it, but people who were murderers, and people who were terrible, and then, you know what, when you're in New York City, and you're in the club business, and you're running around doing this and that, you're going to run into all kinds of people, all kinds, and then it's like you know their energy, and then when you run into them, you understand what they're all about. And it's not like, that's not even like a judgmental thing, because you're not judging them about what they look like or whatever. You're talking about energy. You close your eyes and you can feel that when someone's in your presence, that darkness about them, and it is darkness. So that's the thing, when you're sensitive or if you're an indigo, that's what you're going to feel. You're going to feel that darkness. You're going to feel that, and you have to know how to deal with it and that, you know, like stay away from it, basically. So number four, you are perceptive. Indigos see the world differently. Coupled with innate self-assurance, you often think your way is the right and are offended if others can't see. Much less take action on your viewpoint. You know, other people have a hard time dealing with you because you want them to see your point of view. And that's going on today. It's a very divisive society, but it's a little different than what this is talking about. If indigos ruled the world, you're confident no problems would exist. Now, I don't totally believe that. I believe it in a way, but I also believe that you have to maybe have the idiot in the room kind of running things, because if you have people who are hypersensitive, they may not be able to govern the way you'd want them to govern as a politician. So when you talk about ruling the world, you talk about politicians representing you, basically. You want people who aren't corrupt. You want people who are going to be basically honest. And then an indigo, if an indigo ran the world, I think that'd be a little out there. And I think that self-assurance, it's like you have a level of confidence that if you say something, you know what you're talking about. And that's kind of what it's the way I am, you know what I mean? If I say something, I know what I'm talking about, but I don't force my views and opinions on other people. And a lot of that's going on now. And I'm not saying that my thoughts are better than yours or anybody else's, you know. I'm just putting something together, putting information together and putting it out there. I think like a private investigator, which is what I am. If you give me a whole bunch of information, I'm going to put it together. I'm going to put together a timeline and I'm going to look at it. I'm going to stand back. I'm going to look at it again. I'm going to shape it and form it and use critical thinking to get it done. And at the end of the day, I'm going to have a picture that I can tune into. And then that picture is going to have a higher probability of being right. And then that's really what it is. It's about eliminating the stuff that's not and about adding the stuff that is right. So if you are arrogant and you think that everything you say is right and you run into somebody, and also keep in mind, a lot of times it doesn't matter what people's opinions are, you know, and I know that kind of sounds harsh. You know, I had this woman contact me and on Facebook, didn't even know who she was. And I had put something out there about George Bush Jr., believe it or not. You know, I'm not a huge Bush fan. I'm not a huge political fan, period, you know. I'm in politics in the way of I want representation, but my candidates don't come forward. So, and it's been a long time since anybody was in there that I had any respect for. So anyway, right, this woman contacts me out of the blue and starts like going off on something that I said, and she actually misconstrued what I said, which is kind of funny. So she must have read it pretty quickly. You know, sometimes I'll write things and I'll put a little pun in there or whatever, and I'll kind of, you know, write it a certain way. And it's like that. So she must have railroaded through and got really angry and incensed. She writes me this big, huge, long thing, which I only got past like the first two sentences before I knew that I didn't want to read the rest. There was no point in reading the rest. What people don't get, this is the deal. I don't understand why people think their opinions are more important than anybody else's. You know, why that woman thought her opinion was more important than mine. And I wasn't even like putting an opinion out there that was abrasive. I was just stating a matter-of-fact thing. She goes off on Hillary. I didn't even mention Hillary. She goes off on Hillary Clinton and how I should like Hillary and whatever. And that was the first couple sentences. So I answered it back politely. You know, I don't care what you think. Thank you. Bye. And that's it. I mean, I don't care what you think. When it comes down to me, my survival, what goes on behind my doors, all that I'm in control of. And then what I think is important in that realm. What other people think, it's not important. If people judge you, it's not important. I'm happy with the way I am. If someone's going to look at you and judge you, it's not that you have the problem. It's that they have the problem with whatever you're doing. And a lot of times, if you're doing well, people are going to hate you. You know, when people are successful, you could always have the ones out there who are jealous, who are haters, and they want to just shoot you down any chance they can and then make your life miserable. If they can get in control of that, they will. So never let someone's emotions control your own. And it's that simple. You are your own mountain. In martial arts, we say we establish the mountain, right? This is mountain's ours. And we control everything on it. Somebody comes on, we don't like it, we knock them off, man. It's that simple. Okay, number five. We're getting through this. You question authority. So you are not one to negotiate. So certain in your views and ways, you are often rebellious and critical of those in power. So obviously from all the stuff I just said, yeah, I fit number five because I don't like the way people run things. I think we should be on a progressive plan, and progress means progress. Now, the media has dirtied the word progressive. They liken the word progressive with liberal. Progressives and liberals are two totally, unbelievably, totally different things. So I'm a progressive. I'm a Ralph Nader kind of guy. I was a junior Naderator back in the day. I believe in what he believed in, which is what we should all have as basic rights. It's not like some kind of magic. You have all these things and whatever, we're going to give you all this stuff. No, it's about just being your own person, working your lives, do it. Don't pay the government so much money to go and kill people and things like that. There's a lot to being a progressive. So, obviously, that doesn't exist anymore. And then the guy in charge now is doing what he's doing. I don't hate Trump. I don't love Trump. And then I think that he is very abrasive. But in the same sense, I think that in his mind, he has the confidence where he knows what he's doing, right? Maybe Trump's an indigo. You know, who knows? I doubt it. But it really comes down to you can't just go by blindly and say, you know, all these police shootings that shoot innocent people, no matter what color they are, shouldn't be happening. And you have to question why, especially if you have video of a cop shooting somebody for no reason whatsoever because the cop was scared of something. And then that police officer gets to walk and that person's dead and their family has to grieve. And then you feel like there's no justice. So you have to question authority, military authority, presidential authority, you know, whatever, man. You have to question authority because some of these people are shady, man. They have dirty backgrounds. And you have to, you know, I mean, look at Charles Rangel from New York City. And then he's still there because his people vote him in because he sells them on color. He sells them on race, you know? And then if you look at the guy's record, how corrupt he is, he almost went to jail a dozen times. He keeps skating because they let people like that go. Term limits, term limits, term limits. So do I question authority? Every day. And then when I see the government doing things in my name, with the money that I pay in taxes, when I see them obliterating whole families in Afghanistan because they dropped the bomb in the wrong place, that blood's on my hands. So I take it on myself, you know, when that happens. So, number six, You want to overturn the man. So difficult and rigid systems seem foolish to you, and you often become antagonistic to what others experience as normal. Because you know what? Some people just like to live in complacency. Some people just kind of sit there like, we call them doo-doo-doos back in the city. Oh, doo-doo-doo, you know? A doo-doo-doo is somebody who's just like, hey, look at me, I'm an idiot, I'm sitting here. And they don't care what happens. They don't care if they're being lied to. They don't care what goes on. They only care about their little tiny existence, but they don't care about their neighbors or the people around them. So when you see something being run poorly or the wrong way, when you're sensitive, you know, you got a feel for the future, you know what we need as a society, you want to change it. You want to bring about social change, you know? I volunteer for a ton of stuff. I work for social change all the time. You know, you got to get out there. You got to protest the right things and not the wrong things. And you can't be controlled. You can't be controlled. If you're protesting something, there should be the passion inside of you to do it, not just because someone told you to do it or because you're just following the system, right? So, overturn the man, you got that right. Number 7, you are creative. So, musically, artistically gifted, your art invites others to see the world around through your eyes. I know people who are like that. I'm like that myself. And I just love to create all the time. It could be in the kitchen, baking something, making something. You know, my photography or music and whatever. You know, I used to hang out with a bunch of dudes who had a rehearsal and recording studio. And their parents owned a music studio, a music store that was downstairs, Corette Music in East Meadow, Long Island. We used to jam every day. We'd be there till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, after the bands leave and after all people leave, a bunch of us would be left over. We'd go into the biggest room and we would just turn everything on and jam all night long and have a great time doing it. And the cool thing is that everybody there was kind of in the same realm where, hey, you know, it didn't matter what you were playing. And, you know, maybe you didn't know how to play the guitar, but you could pick it up and start to play and just kind of feel your way through it, or the bass or the drums or keyboards or, you know, saxophones and, you know, trombones and trumpets, whatever. When I was in elementary school, I took a French horn, trumpet, trombone. It's so Star Wars, man. I had to take the trombone because I got all into that whole Star Wars theme type of thing. And then, you know, from then on, at 12 years old, I got into guitar. I was playing guitar before that, but took lessons at 12, started taking lessons. All that stuff, man, because it's an extension of yourself. It's part of yourself. You want to let yourself out, you know? I used to paint and then all that, and then I really just am heavily into photography these days. And I think that's just like, to me, I love to create. So photography there, and especially video or doing things like that, is so much. So much. And I also do these videos called 1 Minute Therapy. It's 60 seconds of something that's relaxing. So I do waterfalls and that type of stuff. You can get that on youtube.com/discoveryparanormal. Find that there. And also this radio show is going to end up on there too. Being creative, it's nice to see it in children, and it's nice to nurse it along and just let them, give them the room to roam when it comes to creativity, right? It's not a negative thing, it's a positive thing. So a lot of people squelch that out. They don't like the kids making noise or something like that, whatever. You know, it's important to just let them play. Even if they're playing trumpet and they're going to go practice outside, annoy their neighbors or the raccoons in the backyard, that nurse their abilities or nurse your own abilities. If you feel like you need to go play something, do it. You know, I got conga drums, man. I hit my congas all the time. You know, I don't play congas professionally. I'm not in a band. I'm not going around. But sometimes I want to beat some skins and I go in there and I play my congas, right? So, number 8, you are a change maker. That doesn't mean like someone says, hey man, you got like 2 fives for a 10. And you're like, yeah. Yeah. That type of thing. If they say, give me 2 tens for a 5, you tell them to get the hell out of there, right? So you're a change maker. Your perception on the failings of society is so keen that you are a magnificent leader offering better methods of business, society, and ways of being. So like I said before, if you have vision, it's helpful because if you're running something, if you're running a business or just running your own life, you can kind of look ahead and see where the pitfalls might be coming, you know, as opposed to just running along with your eyes closed and then falling into a hole or tripping over something or whatever. It's totally like that. So you keep your eyes open. You make sure your glasses are clean. And then you go out there and then you want to create that social change. You want to create, you know, and not even to your own ideas, but to the passions of the people. There's things that we can all agree on. People blab at me about global warming and climate change, and now it's going in the other direction. I'll tell you this, man. I will never say I want dirty air or dirty water, poison water, or poison land. You know, you'd have to be crazy to want to do that. So when it comes to thinking and communicating with people, when they say something like that, you just say, you know, I want the clean air, I want the clean water, I want the clean land. How are we going to do it? You know, giving India $1 trillion, that's not going to work because you're just going to squander the money. I want to know how we can really clean up the world and the places that have the worst problems, like India, like China. You know, there's places that have industrial zones, the United States too, that clog out horrible toxins. People don't want to talk about that. You know, they want to talk about global warming, but they're not thinking about how you can start solving problems at a lower level. All right. So if you want to make change, you have to go out there and affect change. You are a lost soul is number 9. You feel out of place with others as you recognize you are different than most people. You can tend towards being a loner or rebel, unwilling to compromise just to fit in. So, and that's totally me. And I've been called all kinds of names in my life, antisocial, all that other stuff. And I'm not antisocial. I am selectively social. There's a huge difference of antisocial and selectively social. There's people out there I just don't want to hang out with. And it's no offense to them. They just don't offer anything to me that I'm going to grow from the experience. And with me, I love learning. I love growth. And if you don't find me in a museum, you're going to find me reading something somewhere or doing something like that. I love to learn and I love to understand things. I love history. I love looking back and I love thinking like that, you know? And so in the future too, of what things can be. So that's really where it's at. And then Indigo usually has a very small, tight circle of friends who are 100% trustworthy, 100% great people. And then that's what I've got. And I'm not worried about going out there and having the numbers, you know? I mean, quantity versus quality. I'll take quality. I'll take 3 or 4 great people over 20 or 30 crappy people or people who aren't so great or people who may not be there for you. And then, you know what? If you're in a work situation, if you're going to a club and whatever, there's always going to be acquaintances in your lives and that type of thing. But can you connect with them? And that's the thing of being that lost soul. It's not even like being a lost soul. It's a poor term. I'm talking about connecting. Or feeling like you're equal, or knowing like you belong with somebody, you know? And then indigo people, or sensitive people, it's very hard to have that connection, for a lot of people anyway. Very hard to get close, or maybe reveal yourself, or open yourself up, you know? Very difficult to do that, because there are people that use things against you. And then indigo people are very sensitive, very, very, very sensitive. And then if you open your heart up and someone takes a knife and they jab it in there and they do it repeatedly, you know, you're not doing yourself any favors. So, you know, having a hard time getting along with people, it's not even about getting along. It's more about that connection, connecting, you know, feeling like a spiritual equal, you know what I mean? And then there are people that I can talk to, like my friend Art, who is an amazing person. And then he's spiritually in the same realm that I'm in. I know I could bounce stuff off of him, talk, we could have a great conversation, and then he'll understand. And that's all, just being able to understand. Because there's a lot of people out there that you may want to share things with that don't understand. And then after a while, you get used to not doing it. After a while, you just get used to kind of putting it out into the cosmos instead. And that's where you get your answers from. So when you're really young and you're reaching out, like when I was really young and I was reaching out for stuff and I got into all religions, I wanted to know, I read the Quran. And in fact, my friend Rory was becoming a Muslim. And he and I, for 3 years, sat reading the Quran back and forth. I would read it to him and he wanted to memorize it and he would read it back to me. So I know the Quran, I know the Bible, I have the Ethiopian Bible, as a matter of fact, and then the Tao Te Ching and all that other stuff. You want to be able to belong and feel connected, and sometimes it's really hard. And then sometimes you just say to yourself, you know, I'm just passing through this place, going somewhere better. You know, and that's kind of the way it is. And you see the atrocities of this world and the horribleness and how people make people suffer. And you have these horrible leaders, if you can't even call them that, you know, warlords and dictators and whatever, and they're so terrible. And then you have to digest that. And then people say, oh, there's God, and you die and you go to heaven, you know. And that kind of just makes up for your crappy existence and your crappy life, is that you're just going to go and get a better reward somewhere. You know what? People make people suffer. People can change that. It's that simple. So, all right, number 10, you are driven if you are an indigo. And as the indigo soul mission is encoded in your very being, you are unwilling to back down out of integrity. So when the devil shows its face, you don't back down. You, in fact, you fight. And then I've been a fighter all my life, and you have to fight for every little tiny thing. And then sometimes you even resent that you have to fight for every little tiny thing, you know? But you just go forward. You go forward. And then when people come and step on your toes, you teach them a lesson. You teach them that that's unacceptable. You teach them that they're not allowed to treat you like that. Maybe they'll learn, and next time they deal with somebody else, that they won't do that to them. Maybe you can teach someone something, but that's just world. And then being driven in the sense of that passion and following your passions, and then just, you know, hunkering down, sinking your teeth into something, getting into it, that's the deal. Number 11, you are passionate and focused. I would talk about passion all night long and being focused all night long. So while fiery temperaments may be hard to take, you are not one to be still or silenced. So think about that. Indigos have a big mouth and constantly get in trouble for their big mouth. If I was sitting in in-school suspension, you can bet your ass it's because I had a big mouth. And if a teacher had said something that I didn't agree with, or if it was a thing going on in the world, the government, a war, or whatever, and think about it, you're in class, you're there to learn, and they're there to teach you. If you have a problem with information, that teacher should be able to explain around that information. It should turn into a debate, not just, you know, oh, get out of my class, you know, you big mouth, and then that type of thing. But that's the deal, being passionate and focused. And then that's really about anything. You know, if you have that, if you are passionate about something and you're focused, you're going to be successful in that thing, no matter what that thing is. So keep your eye on the prize. Like I said before, stay focused, stay on it. And then that leads us to number 12, you are highly psychic. So indigos have a huge psychic capacity, and it is finely tuned, especially when you get older. If you develop it, it will be. There are people, like I mentioned David before, who has these abilities, but he never really developed it. He never really fine-tuned those abilities. So while you see nothing special in your own ability, it gives you an advantage in reading others with ease and seeing through masks. And I always say, I can see right through people like they're made of glass. And it's a gift from God. It's something that I've always appreciated because it kept me away from a lot of bad people. There's times, you know, I think I'm bragging about myself in a weird way, but there's times that, you know, like one night I woke up, I was really young, and I said to my mom, she was sleeping, she said it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, I said, I'm like, what happened with that earthquake in California, you know? And then there was this huge earthquake in California the next day. And then there's another time where I was like, you know, what happened to that airplane that crashed? And she's like, what airplane that crashed? And then, like, you know, hours later, this airplane crashed on Long Island. A whole bunch of people died. So it's kind of like that. If you're going to say it's coincidence, how could that be a coincidence when you have all of these things happen over and over and over again, and then it's just right all the time? But in the same sense, how do you prevent something from happening if you just know these things? It's very difficult, you know? I had Robbie Thomas on the show last week. We talked about the very same thing. If you have all this information, how do you prevent something from happening? So number 13, you are frustrated. Frustrated. So coupled with their big picture vision and restless soul drive for change, you become easily frustrated with society and others who do not shift quickly enough. Patience is something that should be developed. And that's something I prayed for years, man. Patience. Want to give me something for Christmas? Patience. Birthday time? Patience, man. Because I was impatient. I was assholish impatient back in the day, especially in traffic. You know, you want to just get somewhere. You know what I mean? The person in front of you. That, you know, when I moved upstate, I realized that, number one, I wasn't in a hurry anymore. Number two, the traffic in front of me didn't matter anymore. You just go at your pace, you know, and then it's all a flow. So yeah, maybe you can't get past that car in front of you unless there's some passing zone or whatever, but there's things that you can do to whip that frustration. And then if traffic is really bad, or if you know, sometimes you're just in a block of crappy cars, there'll be 20, 15, 20, 30 cars, whatever, that's just moving and everybody's just kind of stagnant, whatever, I pull over, man, and let them go. I let them go until it's all clear. Especially if I'm not in a hurry at all, I can just go. It doesn't matter because my well-being and my emotions are more important than that traffic and all those other people. And that's kind of a great metaphor for being an indigo and then living your life with other people, is that when they're all like that and they're congested and they're kind of battling each other, they're not in the proper flow, then sometimes you just have to pull over, man, and let him go. Sometimes you have to take yourself out of time. And then that's kind of a silly thing that I do, I've been doing for a long time. I kind of feel like, all right, you're going somewhere and you have to be there at a certain time. Okay, what's the harm in stopping and pulling over? Taking yourself out of that flow. Taking yourself out of the flow that you would have been in. And yeah, you can argue the point where, well, you know, maybe you stopping and pulling over is part of that flow. And if you kept going, you're not taking yourself out of the flow, you know, but you can argue that back and forth. But just pulling over or just stopping and sitting on a bench, chilling out. If you're riding the bike, get off the bike and sit there and chill for a minute for no apparent reason. You don't have to sit there and text somebody. You don't have to sit there and communicate or call someone. You don't have to check your Facebook and all that crap. Just sit there and have some music playing in your mind, or just think to yourself, or just like look at a tree or whatever, man. It sounds kind of hippie-ish, but if you do that, you'll be much happier in life. Much happier in life. So, and then, you know what? Shifting purpose. Indigo children are destined to make changes, they say, right? To challenge society and to be loud. But I'm going to say it's difficult to be heard because the media out there and most of these outlets out there, they like to suppress that type of voice. They don't like it. They don't like anything different. Schools don't like anything different. Schools hate that. If you're in school and you're different, those teachers don't like that. You know, they don't want you to think for yourself either. They want you smart enough to push the button, but dumb enough not to ask questions, right? So a lot of children that are indigo children are thought to have ADHD or ADD, right? And they exhibit a lot of the characteristics of indigo children. So that's something, we're running out of time, but that's something in of itself. And like I said before, I know somebody who has a medium who's a child. She's grown now, but when she was young, she was diagnosed with all kinds of stuff. And it turns out that it's more that she had these abilities and she was able to see things and hear things that other people couldn't see and hear. And then they diagnose, they treat you with drugs. And then there's a lot of people out there saying that there's entities out there that want to suppress all of that. They want to suppress it. So they'll feed your kids on drugs. They say drugs are bad. Then they prescribe all these drugs for your kids, you know. Don't do the drug thing. Go out there and do the nature thing. If your kids have a lot of energy, get them into sport, doing something like that, you know. But if you're an indigo, if you think you're an indigo, if you're a light worker, then you know what your job is. I don't have to tell you because you already know. By me telling you, it's just a reiteration of what you already know. But if your children are indigo children, recognize it, see it, you know, and maybe they do have ADHD. Maybe they do have ADD. Maybe they have whatever disorder. You know what? It doesn't matter, because they're still beautiful people. And then you have to look into that. But if they have these abilities, nurture them along. Put them on that path. They'll put themselves on the path. They'll have that passion. Allow them the room to roam. And I will leave you with that. This is Michael Angley on Discovery Paranormal, February 20th, 2018, on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 in Pass Christian.